Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels. And our guest this episode, we've got Spencer Deitz from Fargo, North Dakota. Spencer's a tournament angler. And one other cool thing that he does in relation to his place here in the fishing industry and his influence on the fishing industry is he puts on these kids fishing clinics. He's been doing it for a long time, and it's really, really cool. That's actually how we met, but I'm not going to say that I'd never heard of Spencer's name before this, because you know Spencer's tournament fishing career goes back. You look at the last decade, or at least in the time that I've been following tournament fishing myself, the last more like 6 to 10 years, looking at the regional results or regional tournament results throughout the year, each year. I mean, you're going to see Spencer's name with multiple high finishes every year. Spencer's definitely, you know, one of the guys to know around the Dakotas here for sure, especially on Devil's Lake. And that's a big part of this conversation, just talking to Spence and getting to know his story and talking fishing with him. But that being said, how we actually met is kind of a fun part of this story too, is that these kids fishing clinics is really, really cool. And getting to know Spencer and understanding how he got involved in it, and what it takes to put on these kids fishing clinics for him, and you know, just his whole personal story around that is just really, really interesting and cool, and hopefully it's inspiring, you know, to people that either ought to be getting more involved in things like this, because that's true, right? I mean, for any of us, it's easy to see somebody putting on a kids fishing clinic or just having a kids fishing clinic locally. You know, like the idea of supporting it sounds really, really cool. But Spencer really took that to another level and grabbing the opportunity, putting on these kids fishing clinics and just sticking with it, doing it for a lot of years and really just devoting a lot of his own time. And it's not like he, you know, came up really fully connected to the fishing industry in any kind of way. I mean, he's very, very self-made in this way. And now, you know, he's got a full-time job and a wife and kids. I mean, you know, and putting on more of these kids fishing clinics than ever, you know, really leaves little excuse for the rest of us to not be involved in better ways than we are. Spencer's a great example of that. And he's also a great stick. So we cover as much as we possibly can in this interview. Yeah, the kids fishing clinics, Devil's Lake fishing. We got Spencer Deitz. Let's get to it. North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities, and as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up, take a look at everything, drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these Clean, Drain, Dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. We're going to talk fishing for sure. We got some topics we got to cover, but I want to know where it comes from. So where or how would you tell us your fishing story? Where does this all begin for you, Spencer? Go ahead.
Yeah, fishing all began really with my dad. We grew up fishing the small lakes of Minnesota. I grew up in Moorhead, just across the river from Fargo. And we would just take our little, you know, 14, 15, 16 foot boat out on a weekend or, you know, late after school. And we'd hit out the lakes close to Moorhead. There's a bunch of lakes, you know, around the DL area that we would go fish. And that's where it all started for me. My dad took me when I was very young. I do have a brother, so he would come along too. And we would just spend time in the boat and try to catch fish. We didn't really know what we were doing back then, so we didn't catch much, but we still had a good time on the water. So when we were very young, that's where it started, all fishing with my dad. And then it just kind of escalated from there.
When did fishing start to really escalate for you?
Yeah, so I grew up playing sports against my brother, and I grew up playing hockey, so we were very competitive. And I loved fishing, and I just thought tournament fishing when I was very young was just the coolest thing, right? I'd follow it on TV. You'd see, you know, these fully wrapped trucks and boats. And when you're a little kid, you just think that's the coolest thing. And you've always like, that's what I want to do. And a lot of kids when they're young do want to do that, but it's like, how do you get there? Right. There's many different ways to get to that spot, to be sponsored in the industry. And you don't have to be the best fisherman, whether it's bass or walleye or whatever you're fishing for, to get there. There's different routes. So I just followed it really close. I've always wanted a tournament fish. We did that for a while with my dad. We started joining these little local regional tournaments. Again, we didn't do very well. And then we kind of started figuring it out year after year, learning more and more and more kind of how it works the tournament wise. And we started doing a little better. And the biggest jump for me, two things really. Number one, I joined in 2008 or 2007. I joined the National Professional Anglers Association. It's just a group that anybody can join. And they have these annual conferences, and you go to the annual conference, and it's all about how to become a professional angler. There's breakout sessions. There are, you can learn, you can meet all the professional anglers. For our case, it was mainly walleye focused. So all the, you know, the top walleye anglers in the country are there. You can talk to them. And more importantly, all the industry leaders for marketing companies are there. So, you know, you have, you know, all your boat companies, your engine companies, tackle companies, they're all there. They have their booths and their marketing leaders are there. So you can run ideas off of them or meet them. And that's where it all started for me. I met David Ittner from Yamaha. He knew that I was a young kid, and he knew I wanted to get into it. And he gave me his business card and he said, keep in touch. At that time, we'll get into it a little bit later, but that's kind of, I started doing these kids fishing clinics a little bit before that. So that's kind of what I'd been doing. And he was very interested in what I was doing. So that was the biggest jump for me, was joining that program and then meeting David Ittner, who was the marketing leader for Yamaha at that conference. And then that's what really jump-started me into the position I am in now with the sponsors and the kids fishing clinics.
Well, but you say the kids fishing clinics. I do want to give some love to that for sure. You said that kind of started prior. How did that get started for you? And just what is that?
The very first one, really, I was, the first professional circuit that I joined, was a team circuit with my dad. And that would have been in like 2006 or seven. And it was the Master Walleye Circuit. And, at the weigh-in, after the first day weigh-in, after these, MWC tournaments, the MPAA would host a youth and family fishing clinic. And, I was a member at the time, and Pat Nye, who was the MPA director, had reached out and said, hey, there is nobody willing to head or host these clinics at these tournaments. We have all these anglers. Would you be willing to do that? Because he's seen that I had done, you know, a few in the past, not many. And I was like, absolutely, I will do that. So at the MWC, this is probably 2006, 7, 8, somewhere in there. I was just heading, all the youth family fishing clinics at the weigh-ins for the MPAA. The kids would come to the weigh-ins, see all the fish get weighed. And then right after that, we would do these clinics, teach them about, you know, safety, aquatic nuisance species. And then they would all go home with a rod and reel combination courtesy of the MPAA and the Future Anger Foundation that they're associated with. So it all started, again, with the MPAA and after the Master Wally Circuit weigh-ins, because no one else was willing to do it. So I just jumped in, and that's what started the process.
It almost kind of sounds a little bit disappointing, right? That like nobody else wanted to do it, but you know, everybody's got their reasons, right? We're all busy. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I don't want to, you know, condemn anybody or anything like that, but you were the one that jumped into it. But there had to be some motivation there. How would you kind of explain that? I mean, is there just something about it? You know, I mean, it's a great deal, right? Or any time we're talking about kids and spreading the word about fishing and, you know, all the good things, that's a great deal. But I'm curious about kind of the motivation and maybe how you would explain that, why you were the guy that said yes.
Well, when growing up, like I liked to fish when I was a kid and I had my dad to take me, right? But there's so many kids out there that don't have someone to take them fishing or even teach them about fishing. And all at the weigh-ins, all these kids were there watching the fish being weighed and they wanted to learn, but you know, their parents didn't grow up fishing, so they hadn't learned at that point. So I was like, someone's got to like just somehow teach and get these kids involved, even if it's at the most basic and elementary level. They just got to get introduced to the sport on a level. And I'm like, I can be that guy. They're already here. I'm here. Why not? Let's do it. So that's kind of why I started. And we'll fast forward, you know, from the last 10 years, going back to the, you know, some of the parents not knowing about fishing, all these fishing clinics that we are doing, we have learned that we're not only educating all these kids, but the parents come to get educated as well, because they want to learn and teach their kids after they come. So that's kind of why we started doing it, and it's worked out very well.
Did you have kids at that time? I mean, I don't even know, like, I don't even know if you have kids now.
I did not have kids at the time. I was in college at that time.
Yeah. That's really impressive.
Yeah. So I was young. Still I'm young. I like to
Yeah.
think.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, no, so I was in college at that time. I do have two little ones now, 6 and 3. So we're full force busy now with them, and they actually come to all the clinics and they love it too. So, but yeah, we didn't have kids at the time. We just, someone just needed to introduce these kids to fishing. And, I always like to say I was right place, right time, right? I was just in the right place at the right time for the organization. And I said, yes, I'll do it. And that's how it all started.
Yeah, man. I think that's awesome. I mean, you didn't have any kids. You're not a very old guy now, but you've been doing this for a while. You were probably almost like a big brother type figure when you started that out. I mean, we're talking kids that are, you know, of all ages, I imagine, but I mean, you know, say you're a 10, 12 year old kid. I mean, you were probably a similar age to some of these kids, like older brothers. You know what I mean? It wasn't like,
right.
You know, it's not like, you know, and there's a factor, you know, like a relatable factor to that. The communication is, you know, so, but again, it's like, it's tough to get that kind of commitment out of people. You know, we just all justify for our own reasons, you know, why we don't have time for stuff like that. So yeah, I definitely think that's a huge feather in your cap, and you've stuck with it this long. So what's kind of the status of that? I'm curious about, that just what the offerings are, what your schedule is like for that.
Yeah. So now so last year in 2023, so before that, to say prior to 23, wherever we were traveling, whether it was a tournament or if we would go visit my in-laws over south of Duluth, we always have the kids with, and we always have the boat. So anywhere we're, you know, in my wife and I and family are in a place more than, you know, 2 days, we just try to set up a youth fishing clinic. And it's pretty crazy that, we would just email the chamber of that city or someone who has, you know, connections within that city, like, hey, we're looking to do this. This interests you guys, and everyone would always say yes. And every clinic was always full as soon as they would put out a flyer. So, that's what we were doing prior to 23. Just anywhere we were more than 2 days, we would just set up a clinic, and, you know, they're an hour, hour and a half long. So it didn't take much time, out of our day. So we would do it. And then the MPAA would support it. They'd give hats, rods, reels, all that stuff to the kids. And, you know, in 2023, Shields and Fargo, they really liked what we were doing and they wanted to jump on board. So now, current day, We hold 5 youth and family fishing clinics at Shields. They're during the week and they fill up pretty fast. We also do a few random ones, you know, around the Midwest when we're still traveling. So we go to like Moose Lake, we'll do a clinic there. We do a bunch up in Devil's Lake because we fish a lot of tournaments up there. And it changes from year to year, depending on our travel schedule and where we're at, but we're doing anywhere from 10 to 15 a year, I would guess.
And when you say you do the ones at Shields, that's at Fargo?
Yep. Shields in Fargo. Yep.
Right on. I mean, you make it sound so easy. I think it's like, but yeah, it's funny how it's crazy how there's just not more of that going on. Right. Cause we could always use more of that. Right. It's such a great thing. You make it sound so easy. I think it just really probably just boils down to the effort. Somebody's just got to be willing to do it. But, and for people that have probably turned it down in the past, it's like, I mean, you have a day job, you have a family now, like you're a busy guy. You're as busy as anybody that would say no to something like this. Like what would you say to that? I mean, as far as the schedule and everything that goes into it, what are some of the tougher parts of it? You know, some of the hurdles that you got to get over.
Yeah. So, I would start off saying it's really not difficult. The MPAA makes it super easy. So these are, you know, sponsored clinics by them. You just fill out a youth and family clinic form. It takes no more than 3 minutes. You just give date, time, location, how many kids you think, and they will literally send you. If you think you have 30 kids, they'll send you 30 t-shirts, 30 rods. So you have those to give out. And then you just contact whoever, which facility you want to do it at. So obviously we do it at Shields. We contacted them by that setup. But if say you're in, you're going to a city, for example, we go to Moose Lake now, south of Duluth. We do one there every year. And we just contacted the chamber office and the lady there said, absolutely, let's do it. We have never been turned down, right? So every place is looking for this. They just want, you know, community education, events in the summer for the kids. No one will turn it down. So it actually is pretty easy. It doesn't take too much time. If just start with one, right? So anyone out there thinking to maybe I want to do one, just do one, see how it goes, and go from there. And we're the way we do it, we're obviously, we do a ton of them, but we've been doing it so long. We have, you know, we have a process and a schedule, and I have the support. If I didn't have the support from my family, my wife and my kids, there's just no way we can make it work. Cause we work 2 full-time jobs. We're here, we're there, but, we get the schedule set, for work and for the fishing stuff, beginning of summer, and we stick to it and it all works out.
So then what do you offer? If somebody wants, you know, kind of describing how you do it, talking to, you know, if there's somebody listening that wants to get involved in something like this, I mean, we're definitely giving strong direction there. But if somebody, you know, all anglers, we all know, you know, people in and around us, whether it's family, friends, people at work or whatever it is that probably, you know, they have kids or, you know, should probably look into this. What are some of the resources, or maybe describe, you know, a little bit more detail, the offerings for people that maybe ought to be attending something like this?
Yeah. So how a typical clinic works is we spend 20 to 30 minutes giving, you know, it's like a PowerPoint presentation, just teaching the kids about, you know, ANS, on the water safety, you know, fish identification. It's interactive, right? We ask the kids questions, they ask us questions. We make it fun. We keep that part short, 20, 25 minutes, because we need their attention. And they're all having fun and laughing and telling, you know, the fish they caught and the size and where they like to fish and all that. And then after that portion, we, if the weather's nice, we typically go outside. We have 4 stations set up, in there. I have my boat there. So they get a full tour of the boat and what's in it and where goes what. And, we have a bait station where, they play with leeches and crawlers and minnows and underwater cameras. And then another station is, we kind of switch back and forth. We do knot tying. We teach them how to tie knots, whether it's cleat knots to the dock or, you know, tying knots to the hook. And then the last one we do is a coloring contest where we teamed up with Clam Outdoors and they have a ice fishing lure called a Tika Minnow. So we have a page of a blank Tika Minnow, and all the kids spend, you know, 5 to 10 minutes coloring what they think is a design of a lure. their own personal lure. And at the end of the year, we will choose 10 winners from the coloring contest. And we actually have custom Tika minnows painted to match their drawing. And then we'll mail them the lure and their drawing back to the house the following year. So they have a lure to fish with that they design that's an exact match to the drawing. So that's something cool that we have incorporated into the clinics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. I mean, if I was a kid, you know, 6, 7 years old, even like 12 years old, I could think of my 12-year-old version of myself, 14-year-old version of myself. If somebody mailed me a bait that was like worth $8, it was custom painted in the mail and it was addressed to me, man, I would flip backwards. I mean, that's, I think that's really, really cool. You know, all those things you did that. And, yeah, man, no, I like it. And you've definitely done, you know, more of those things. What would be, you know, we'll definitely say this at the end, but I definitely want to say it early in this conversation. Like, what would be the resources for somebody to maybe look that up? You got a website or something?
So we promote it, all these clinics on, just Facebook and Instagram. My Facebook page is mm-hmm. my first name. And last name is Dites, D as in dog, E elephant, U umbrella, T Tom, Z zebra. So Spencer Dites, all that's promoted on there. And then, Dites_fishing on Instagram. We, promote it on there. We are, getting a website upgrade. So, that is DitesFishing.com. And once that turns live, all the information will be on there as well.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities. And as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up. Take a look at everything. Drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these Clean, Drain, Dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that so many, the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. No, man, I think that's really, really cool. It's definitely worth, I mean, you know, it wouldn't even bother me if we just spent an entire podcast talking about that, because just that type of message is just, we're always going to have to be promoting that sort of thing. And it would be so cool if somebody, you know, somebody just stepped up and started one, you know, just listening to this, or definitely, you know, just anybody out there, if you know anybody, or if you're just, you know, your family, you know, would fit that bill. You got some young kids, and it's always fun to just bring them to these events, and you know, they're going to learn from it. It's going to be a memory, just like a fishing memory. I imagine, you know, going there playing with crawlers and leeches and the whole bit. I just think that's really awesome, man. But that being said, we're kind of going in chronological order with some of the things you've done in fishing. I mean, you're obviously a fisherman. We got to talk about that. You said, so you kind of started doing that even before you were a member of the NPAA. And then that was a meaningful thing for you. Even just personally as an angler, you know, tournament fishing, it's expensive. It's, you know, the time commitment and all that, and being able to, you know, plug yourself in with, you know, a sponsorship and things like that. tell me a little bit about the fishing then. I mean, you've been doing this, but you've also been doing a lot of fishing and tournament fishing. What would be, you know, thinking back in and around that same timeline, you know, just the tournaments that you fish and just some of the jumps you made fishing wise?
Yeah. So, again, I was, you know, fishing these local regional tournaments with my dad, and I've always followed the professional events back then. I believe it was the PWT and the FLW. That was the two professional walleye circuits going, in the late 2000s, I would guess, mid to late 2000s. And, you could sign up, you can still sign up today as co-anglers, for the National Walleye Tour, which it has turned into. So that's what I did. I just wanted to learn, see how these guys do it. So I signed up for, I think I fished two or three, PWT and FLW events within, you know, 2 or 3 year span. So I didn't do a ton of them, but one or two a year. And that's where I learned the aspect of tournament fishing. You're, I think at the time it was like $250. You can enter this tournament as a co-angler. You fish 3 days. So back then the tournaments were 3 days. So a co-angler would fish a professional angler, a different professional angler each day. So you're basically getting, a 3 day guided fishing trip, with some of the best professional walleye anglers in the country, in a tournament where if you do well, you could actually get some of that money back, and it's only costing you $250. So I thought that was like the greatest use of money, to go learn how to walleye fish professionally and what they do on the water and when and why and how. And that's what really got me started into focusing on some professional tournaments, because fishing those, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 tournaments as a co-angler, was the education I gained from that was by far more than anything.
You remember the first couple that you did and who you fished with?
It's crazy. Yes. So, the first one I did was in, Mille Lacs Lake. It was a PWT event. The first day I had, Bob Props Jr. He's from South Dakota.
Oh yeah. I've had him on the podcast before. Yeah.
And I remember exactly, we were pulling bottom bouncers on Mille Lacs Lake. We were catching walleyes. I still have him a contact in my phone today. I still talk to him every now and then. It's been maybe a year or two. But we have communicated, you know, within, you know, if that was 10 years ago, but maybe, you know, 10 times since then. So, and he's helped me out if I'm fishing down in South Dakota, and he's like, hey, try this. We've been fishing here. So, I also had, another guy, Al Schultz is his name, I believe. He's over in Minnesota. I had him down when I was fishing in Mobridge. And it was funny because I was his co-angler, and I think I was in high school at that time, maybe just started college, somewhere in there. And, you know, fast forward to 4, 5, 6, 7 years later, we were fishing against each other in the MWC events, and we joke and talk about it all the time. So, you do get to remember these guys. And another one I fished with was Pat Nye. And it turns out he happened to be the director of the National Professional Angler Association for 10 years and still is to this day. So, the anglers you meet, they're great guys. You can make some great friendships, and you can learn a ton from these guys. So I highly recommend any kid or college kid looking into it today to sign up for the National Walleye Tour as a co-angler, and just to learn what these guys are doing.
I mean, do you feel like you could like easily remember some fishing, like some of that fishing information that you picked up on from those guys early on as a co-angler that you still utilize today? I mean, there's just gotta be.
Yeah. So, Pat and I, when we were fishing in Mobridge, we were south of Mobridge, 10, 15 miles. That was the first time I ever pulled lead core. I hadn't done it. I knew what it was. But you know, when you're young and you hear lead core and it's a new technique, it's intimidating, right? You don't know like, okay, what exact reel do I need? What rod do I need? Is it medium light? Is it heavy? All the length, all this stuff. You don't know anything. So he taught me how to pull lead core. And we still do it that exact same way today. And then Al Schultz taught me how to rig big minnows. So if we're, you know, rigging big red tails or big creek chubs, most of that stuff he taught me how to do. So it's crazy. Just what I have learned from it, fishing wise, technique wise, we still use some of that information today, and it's pretty wild.
Well, what's your fishing style? Like, how would you describe yourself? Like, you know, as an angler, like, what's your What are your confidences? Like, what's your style?
So we grew up fishing. Devil's Lake, I would say, is my home water.
Okay.
And we loved to bobber fish. We were just patience. We would sit on a rock pile for 8 hours, and if we got six bites, we knew they were going to be good. We'd be happy with it. So we didn't really move around a lot. I just very patient and waiting. That was my style until forward-facing sonar came up like 3-4 years ago. Now we're moving. Now it's completely changed the game. We're moving, we'll fish 10, 15 spots in a single day, covering water, that sort of stuff. So we actually just fished the casino tournament in Devil's Lake last week, and we started out bobber fishing. The water was very cold, so we bobber fished for 2-3 hours in the morning, and then we went on from there. But I'd say now we're more just moving around, hitting as many spots as possible.
What is it about forward sonar now that just gives you that confidence to be more mobile when you weren't before?
You're never fishing a dead area. You never put your line in the water unless you know there's a fish there. And when you get really good at it, you can tell the size of the fish. So, I mean, we'll pass, 30, 40 fish that we won't even cast that you can tell, they're 15 to 20 inches, right? You don't want those for a tournament. So you won't waste your time casting in dead areas, and you won't waste your time casting at the wrong fish. It's just so so efficient in a tournament setting.
Yeah, but I mean, I just get a kick out of that. And Devil's Lake is kind of the poster child for, like slip bobber. I mean, that, forward sonar has definitely made that popular everywhere, but Devil's Lake, just the classic stories of when Devil's Lake came up and all the wood that was out there and all the tournament guys that were, before spot lock, tying off to trees and slip bobbering in the woods and all that stuff. Like, but there's still a ton of value to that. And that's not even just a Devil's Lake conversation, but that is a great example. And still to this day, like bobber fishing is still a great way certain times of year, certain days of the year to fill your live well or get a tournament bag. But like, when you're moving and grooving like that on Devils, like, do you just realize now maybe like, okay, I know this spot was good. Like without forward sonar, I would sit here and slip bobber here because I know there's big fish. Do you still like cycle back through that spot? Is it more like bite window oriented, or do you feel like you've completely gotten into this where you're just moving and grooving? You have a milk run of spots. You don't go back and revisit and see if those big fish are there. Like, how would you describe that?
So kind of both, really. If we're fishing rock pile, right, we knew in the past 10 years this rock pile typically will hold larger fish. I'll throw the trolling motor down, we'll buzz over it and see if there's anything sitting on it. If there's not, we move on to the next one, right? Whereas, 6 years ago, we would sit there for 5 hours waiting for the fish to come. So now we just wasted 5 hours of fishing, hoping that these fish will cycle through there and you'll get five big ones, which has worked out and has not worked out. With forward facing sonar, you can, instead of waiting for those fish, you can fish those areas around that spot and find them, right? Because if they're not there, they're close, right? So you can go and search for them. So you can go to them versus waiting for them come to you, and you can do that much quicker. So you're just saving a ton of time.
No, man, I like that. You feel like your tournament big. You feel like your tournament fishing has definitely gone up with that strategy. I mean, I think for a lot of people, we are kind of catching on to the forward sonar thing just because it's, I don't know, maybe it's just like really, really fun or it's really curious and interesting to us. But not everybody is doing better in tournaments because of it. There's some inefficiencies and all that. Like, how would you describe that for yourself?
Yeah. So we did okay. We did pretty well bobber fishing during fishing that way. And we won a few tournaments and placed high and all that. And it was, pretty close, that sort of stuff. But when I started using forward facing sonar, I'll have to say, so 3 years ago, most people know Tom Wynn from Fargo.
Yeah.
Kind of started all. He's a buddy of mine, and he is the one that put me on it 3 years ago. And he taught me, like, this is what you need to do, and this is why, and this is how you read the electronics. He taught me everything 3 years ago. And I'm like, this is going to be a game changer. So we started using that the last 2 years in the tournaments, and we did very, very well. No one was really doing it yet. And we were just separated a little further from the pack than we were when we were just doing the same technique as everybody else type thing. So it has elevated a lot. This year, actually, we had our casino tournament last weekend. I would bet 90% of the boats were using forward facing sonar. And last year there may have been two or three. So everyone, you know, has caught on to it, that sort of thing now. So it's going to be more difficult to separate yourself just because everyone's doing it. But, the last 2 years versus the previous, you know, way how I was fishing, it's really separated us for 2 years. Yeah.
But definitely, I think, you know, talking about mentorship or, you know, talking about Tom or guys like Tom, but Tom is this absolutely a stud in that. And the teaching, I think this is just my take. You can, you know, tell me I'm wrong or whatever, or, you know, different for you. But, you know, there's a lot of other great technologies that have come through. You know, like it's easy to name things like mapping. You know, there's a ton of anglers now. You don't even have to be that old to have fished, you know, prior to having good mapping, you know, like we do now in a lot of bodies of water, or just, or side imaging or things like that. But a lot of these great, you know, developments in technology and gear and all that, I guess to me, so many other things besides forward sonar had way more broad appeal, where you could just, as a solid angler with your own thoughts, you could take in these new technologies from the past and really just your own time on the water. You know, people were catching on or benefiting from it, you know, on an individual basis so much quicker. But I feel like forward sonar is one of those where I feel like the guys that have that steeper learning curve are getting that mentorship, are asking those questions. Is, man, what I see, and again, this is just even just myself as an example, where if I just got forward sonar and was convinced that it was a good piece of technology, and I got it, and I only ever just put my own time into it, I would probably still be crippled by my own memories, and just, I wouldn't be able to use it for its efficiencies until a great example would come along and just show me what it is that I'm missing about it, where I don't feel like, you know, mapping really has that. I think anybody can just get mapping and like all of a sudden start finding a bunch of spots with, you know, map studies, not that tricky, you know, just like, oh, there's a bunch of rock piles out there I didn't know about. You know, you don't need somebody to tell you that.
Yeah.
You can look at the map. Does that make any sense? But like having that little bit of mentorship and some of these guys that are just on another level, you know, just whether it's, you know, just how they're thinking, but if they teach you some of that perspective and strategy, I mean, you know, that had to have been just like a huge, huge deal for you to at least be able to benefit from it way sooner than just purely on your own.
Oh, wait, we actually just had this conversation on the way home from our tournament last weekend. Our tournament partner was with me. He's like, hey, how'd you know this? And how'd you know that? And I was like, Tom taught me. Like I don't know if I'd have been able to figure it out, honestly. Without him telling me this and that and the tricks, and there's a lot that goes into it. It's easy to do, but it's more difficult to be like an expert like Tom is, right?
Or to make you better.
Yeah.
I think that's a thing. It doesn't make the fish jump in the boat, and it doesn't make you better all the time if you're just out there trying to validate, you know, your biases. If you're just trying to go out there and, you know, but being open-minded about this stuff and really, I think that has a lot to do with it for sure. Like that mentorship with some of these guys, and then, you know, you've kind of unlocked that code and now you can mentor, you know what I mean? Like you have some of those successes and then you kind of become one of those guys for other, you know, for the rest of us too. But it's like, I think there's definitely levels to this. And, you know, I think that, you know, like, I don't know, I think that sets forward sonar apart. And I think that is partly to do with some of the, not I don't want to talk about the weird drama, but like people that don't really catch on to it very much, or maybe just kind of like those stubborn individuals that don't like to ask for directions. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's like that, I think there's definitely something to that. I think that being open about it and being willing to kind of, you know, seek out some of that information, or, you know, go to the seminars, man. It's like, if you were ever going to go to a seminar, like this day and age, there is so much information happening in and around this forward sonar that you're not going to be able to teach yourself, even with, hours on the water. Like it might take you half a lifetime, you know, for the learning curve is just so steep.
It is, especially with the amount of technology that are in these units. I mean, there you get to the point where you can tell, like before you cast at it, you can tell how big the fish is within an inch or two, right? And you know, you can get really good at it. And I will say one more thing. Tom has a project coming out in August. And that's exactly what he's going to do. He's going to teach everybody exactly how he has done it so well for so long. So if anybody interested in it, if they want to keep an eye out for that, it's going to be a pretty cool project, and he's going to spill everything. So if anyone wants to learn, that'd be a good place to do it.
For you on Devil's Lake, how's it fishing this year? You know, talking about the tournament, I mean, I don't need to know all your tournament secrets, but I just love to talk about Devils and how it fished for you at this last tournament, just, you know, the conditions that were out there, and maybe just anything about that.
Yeah, so this year up in Devil's Lake, it's kind of an off year. We had a very, I'd say, early spring, but it never got hot, so the water temperature is lower now than what it has been typically. So it was 55 in the morning, which is very low. It got up to, depending on where you were on the lake, maybe 60. I don't think we ever saw 61 where we were fishing. It was tough. Fishing was tough. I know a lot of the guys were saying that, you know, you're the pitchers, right? If they're pitching the crankbaits or the plastics up in the weeds or in shallow, they were struggling. Been saying, like, I talked to some guys, like, I haven't seen Devil's Lake like this bad in 10 years. Well, the water just hasn't really warmed up yet. So we just slowed everything down. If you slow it down, slip bobbers are great right now. That's how we started the tournament, going back to the old school Devil's Lake way, when you're, you know, tying up into the timber and throwing out some slip bobbers. That's actually how we fished the first 2-3 hours of the tournament. Sometimes when it was so calm, then our spot lock, you know, kind of gets a little goofy because it has no wind to keep it in the spot. So we ended up tying to some trees and slip bobber fished for a little bit. And then we went on and started, you know, using forward-facing sonar. But it was tough. We caught 7 walleyes during the tournament. They were okay, right? We had 7. So we weighed in 6 for like 23 or 24 pounds, something like that. But we didn't have it figured out. We were very lucky to catch the fish that we caught. And I think the last hour we figured out quite a bit of information. So if we had a little more time, I think we could have done very well. But as soon as that water warms up, it should be within the next 5 or 10 days, I would think. Devil's Lake fishing is going to get really good in the next week or two.
But I mean, that's still like a, you know, round numbers, like a 4-pound average. Like, can you imagine, like, you know, 10, 12 years ago, having a 4-pound average and then just, you know, having to say that you didn't have it figured out? I mean, that'd be like a top 5 weight 10 years ago.
Anywhere.
You catch 20 pounds and say a 5 fish tournament, or, you know, it's a 6 fish tournament, just, you know, to kind of, you know, explain that. But I mean, you know, if you have like a, you can go anywhere, you know, in the country, you know, and I don't want to put all the blame on forward sonar, just anglers in general are just getting so good. Everybody's so dialed in, but man, oh man, like even just in your lifetime, isn't that pretty interesting? I mean, it's like, you know, what you were shooting for weights when you were just getting into tournament fishing and what that was all like versus now, the expectations and standards just are super high.
It's gotten out of control. A few reasons. I obviously guys are getting so good. And forward facing sonar obviously has helped a lot, but yeah, back when we started fishing the Devil's Lake tournaments, you could weigh 5 fish. And the goal was always 20 pounds, right? If you hit 20 pounds, you had a chance to win. You know, you might need, you know, 22, 23 to actually win, but you're always in the top 5. Like 20 was always the goal. Now it's at least 25.
Yeah. 20 pounds are like, you know, you're nervous if you're going to cash a check if you got
yeah,
3.5-4 pound average. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh my God.
And I think it just goes, especially for Devil's Lake, it just goes to show what type of fishery it is. Like there's so many walleyes out there. There's so many big ones. There's so many of the, you know, 12 to 17 inchers. It's just chock full of walleyes of all different sizes. But I mean, if you look at the NWT last year, look at those bags. Like that was incredible, right?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, you've probably learned some things, you know, that kind of help give you some direction. But if you could sort of speak objectively to Devil's Lake, what would be some tips and tricks if somebody is just going to look for above average fish? You know, you say it's chock full of like those eaters, you know, 16 inches. But if somebody wanted to just go out and dial in Devil's Lake so that they could have a 20 inch average or something like that, are there some tips and tricks? Does it purely get itself narrowed down to the areas that you're fishing in? Or are there some techniques? Like if somebody just wants to go out and be, you know, more like catching those above average fish, is there something on Devil's Lake that you've learned that you could pass along?
It's typically location. You know, we still like to bobber fish a lot, especially when we got the kids. Like in the summer, let's say late June to end of August when it gets hot, any deeper rock is what we like to throw bobbers out and typically catch the bigger fish. If you're catching, you know, 10 to 15, 16 inches, we find that they're really not mixed, right? It's very, very seldom when you get a bunch of 14s, 15s, 16s, and then you'll get the next 10 fish will be in that 20 inch range, right? They all kind of stay together size wise, if that makes sense. So in the summer, I would fish deeper rock at 20, at least 20. All the way down to 35 and 40 feet. And typically that's where your bigger fish will hang out. However, I will say it's Devil's Lake. We've realized in the last 2 years that there's deep fish, there's shallow fish. They're always going to be everywhere. Doesn't even matter the water temperature. They're always everywhere. But, the majority of the bigger ones we've caught in the summer months have been deeper. On rock piles.
Yeah, I think that tip alone, you know, of just, if you're catching smaller fish, you can't expect, you know, your next bite to be a big one. If you want to dial in a pattern, but for you, like, what's a big move? Do you just got to go 200 yards down, you know, the line and you get into a different school of fish? Talk about maybe like big moves, small moves. If you're kind of trying to dial in a pattern, you know, you're getting bites, you got a depth range figured out. But if you're just catching the wrong fish, how big of a move do you like to make?
We'll leave the area. Because a lot of these spots on Devil's Lake, there's rock piles. They're single rock piles or maybe two rock piles together. That aren't far apart, and those fish are going to be very similar that are in that area. So if you're only catching those small ones, we will just head out and find another one. But like, say if we're pre-fishing for a tournament, we hit as many as we possibly can hit. And if we catch one big one on one of them, we'll leave. We just don't sit there and hammer on those fish. And we're not catching a lot of fish. A lot of people, like if these, say you see tournament guys come in that were bobber fishing, they had five walleye for 28 pounds, and you like look at the weights and they're like, how is that even possible? They must have the greatest day fishing ever. More likely, that's probably the only five fish they caught in 8 hours. So it's not, we're not just catching, you know, 10, 20 of these things. It's, we're like, our thought is if we get one good fish an hour, that's kind of our goal, is to catch one good one in an hour. So it's different, right? If you're out there fishing with the family, or anywhere by yourself, all you want to do is catch fish, right? It's a whole different mentality when you're tournament fishing, and these big ones don't come fast. So I don't know. Does that make sense? It's tough.
No, that makes perfect sense. And that's really exactly what I'm going for. Like, you know, I have to remind myself of these things. I mean, I ask because personally I like hearing you describe it, because it'll be your voice in my head when I'm out fishing, and it's your expectations have a lot to do with, you know, maintaining confidence and fishing well. But if you want to upsize, and this is probably true in a lot of bodies of water, you fish a lot of different bodies of water as well. But if you expect yourself to put in the work to find bigger bites or better bites than just the average, and you don't even have to be a tournament angler to want to do that. But it definitely comes with some other, you know, expectations. It definitely comes with more to just, well, I just want to find the nicer fish. There's going to be less of them. You got to adjust the whole, you know, if I expect to catch bigger ones, or if I expect myself to find and catch bigger ones, I also got to expect to catch a few less. I think that's a really important piece to remember, because that's, you know, if we're not catching as many as we did yesterday, we caught a bunch of little ones yesterday, so I expect to catch, you know, 30 or 40. I'm that good because I did it yesterday. But today I want to find bigger ones, and you only got 3 bites by noon. You know, as long as they're the right bites, in a lot of cases, like, that's, you know, that's the message there. Like, that's what you can expect. So you got to decide if that's what you're in for, right?
Yeah, and if you had 3 good fish by noon in a tournament, that's pretty good, right? You have 3 more hours, if not 4 hours, to get 2 more. You're right on track. And that's kind of the mentality that we're thinking, right? So 3 good ones by noon for us, we like that.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that those are just, I mean, that's a big part of the story. That's a big part of people's learning. If they're on the journey, like, again, I'm just referencing myself, the amateur's amateur, like, you know, I'm always competing against the fish. I'm competing against, you know, myself, you know, from yesterday, where I'm just trying to get better. But it just, you know, remembering that perspective, and you almost kind of got to move away from your old memories and your old expectations. A lot of us getting a lot of bites is a part of our journey. It's like, if we can learn how to find the right, or, you know, the popular pattern where we can get the most bites, that helps us with our confidence as anglers. There's sort of like a stage that you got to go through, you know, to reach that level before you can just say, well, I just want to catch big ones from now on. To some extent, you gotta be proficient with different techniques, right? We already talked about that, and everything that you learned early on in your tournament career of just, you know, learning lead core and learning rigging big minnows and slip bobbering and all that, like, you know, to build confidence in those things, you know, a big part of that for everybody is like getting fish catches. But then when you move into that stage in your career where tournament angler or not, you're looking for better bites. So I don't know. I totally appreciate all that. I think that's a big reminder for a lot of people. They got to tell themselves that versus, you know, you only get 3 bites by noon. You think you're failing because it's not as many fish as you've caught in other times. So then you just revert back and you just spend the rest of the day going and catching those 16 inches just because it was like an ego thing. But then by the end of the day, you're still finishing the bottom of the pack, and you just blame it on the fish or whatever it is, but you just got to keep your head down and grind those things out.
Some of the best advice that I heard, I think Troy Morris, he's a fisherman in Bismarck. He said it could be the best fishing spot in the whole lake, but it could be the worst tournament spot in the whole lake. And I always think about him saying that because it makes perfect sense. Like, yeah, you could go catch 50, 60, you know, 15 to 17 inches. It's the best spot on the whole lake for fishing, but it's not going to do you any good, especially when you're tournament fishing. So it's really the worst tournament spot on the lake. So I always go back to him saying that, and it makes a lot of sense.
What do you got left? You're fishing the casino circuit this year. What do you guys got left?
So we fished the casino circuit. We've had 2. The first one is in Mulbridge. Which we were trolling lead core. We were the exact same thing I learned from Pat when we were down there in like 2006. And then we had Devils, and we have Sakakawea coming up in August, I believe, early August. And then the championship is down in Mulbridge again at the end of August. So that's the casino one. And then the Devils Lake Chamber tournament's coming up here in 2 weeks. I always fish that one with my wife every year. That's just a fun, family-oriented tournament, right? It's get the kids in there. There's a bunch of kids, there's a bunch of wives. You still got your, you know, your other guys who are, you know, fishing the same tournaments as everyone else, but it's fun. So if you're, I always recommend that for, you know, for a husband and wife or a son and father or mother or daughter or whoever, that if you want to do a tournament, that the Devil's Lake Chamber one is an awesome one to do.
Judging the conditions this year on Devil's Lake, talking about water temperatures, kind of, you know, having fish in a little bit different pattern or a little bit different attitude than other years at this time. You know, if somebody's going to Devil's Lake, say, you know, in the next couple of weeks or to say like the month of July, what should they be looking for to have a little bit of success? Again, you know, talking not necessarily tournament perspective, but, you know, if somebody's going to Devil's Lake for the first time or they're still just trying to learn Devil's Lake, what should they be looking for this July to have some success?
So July, if you're looking just to go out and catch a ton of fish, any of the sunken roads, you can pull bottom bouncers and spinners, crawlers, leeches. You will catch fish almost every time, whether it be walleye, northern, Whatever, you know, the Golden Highway runs from Graham's Island to Minnewaukan, and that is always a great spot. Just stay on top of the road and pull some bottom bouncers. You know, it's bottom bouncers are easy with kids, right? You can put in the rod holder and just troll straight. If you get into the ditches of some of these places, that's when you get snagged up. So just try to stay on top. And there's a bunch of sunken roads over up in Pelican if you're in that way. Yeah, just anywhere on top of these hard gravel roads that are flooded from 1990, way back when. They always seem to hold fish, and it's pretty easy fishing.
That's enough. I'm really, really happy with the time and everything that we've covered. So unless something else pops into your mind, man, this would be the time where, you know, we kind of talked about your social media and stuff, but I want to plug it right now. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, you know, about the kids fishing clinics, for any reason, if they want to get involved and maybe do one of their own, or if, you know, it's somebody that wants to attend, or something like that. Or if they just have fishing questions about Devil's Lake for you, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, they can. I'm certainly can take any emails. If they want to email me questions, how to do this or that, spencer.dites@gmail is my email. I'll respond that way. If they're looking into getting into, you know, running their own youth fishing clinics, or just want to try one and go through the MPAA, the website's mpaa.net, and you can look on that. The only caveat there is you have to be a member of the MPAA, which anybody can be. You just sign up. So, and then my social pages, we always promote all these youth clinics on social media to get the word out. That's kind of our main promotion for those, just to let people know the dates and times. Again, in my Facebook page, just spencer.dites, and then Instagram is dites_fishing.
Dude, I appreciate the time, Spencer, man. And yeah, I definitely appreciated the other day. It was a little wild.